I'm Stargate Pioneer from the official GunnaGeek.com podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hey friends, Jordan Woods Robinson here from AMC's The Walking Dead and Blue Man Group, and this is PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. We're a geek podcast for geek culture, so are you ready to get your geek on? Sit back, relax, grab some gluten-free, non-GMO popcorn, and let's dive into the world pop culture bliss.
You are listening to PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture.
Captain's Log Supplemental.
PopX Cast.
Hasta la vista, baby.
And what's up, everyone? This is PopX Cast coming to you on this Sunday night. Mr. Burke, what's going on in your neck of the woods, my friend?
Joe, I am so glad to be back. I missed the last show and it was depressing, but you know what? You guys did an amazing job.
Dude.
And all of your thoughts on Solo, I was sitting there like, yep, mm-hmm, I agree everything you said. So great job, man. Great show.
Thanks, man. You know, I actually got a little bit of flack. I got a little flack. There's one of my buddies that listens to me. He's like Doug Hawks. He is like the walking encyclopedia of Star Wars pop culture. And he's like, you know what he said? He's like, you went a little hard on Star Wars. So you got to look at it though. You know, he is to Star Wars what I am to Marvel. Does that make sense?
Like
so,
big,
you know, you start dogging on Hawk. There's going to be, you know, my defenses are going to go up, but Doug, if you're watching, I love you, dude. I got to throw out a little name drop for you. And all of our amazing viewers and checking us out right over here. We got Sean and Luke hanging out with us over in the PopX chat room. Hey, guys, check us out over at facebook.com/PopXcast. Mr. Burke, are you ready to like kick this thing off?
My brother, I am so ready. It's been way too long.
You mean your cousin?
Let's get into it. Oh, but baby, you like my brother.
You stop it. Okay, I like what you're saying. Okay. All right, so coming up on this episode of PopX, will Disney be able to outbid Comcast? We're going to be talking about that. Now, we talk a little bit about E3 and all the events that went out in California and some games that we are excited for. And Cloak & Dagger gets some high marks as we dive into the origins of also Negasonic Teenage Warhead and Captain Marvel. Mm-hmm. And also, this is a jam-packed episode. We give a film review for The Incredibles. That's going to be cool.
Yeah.
Incredibles 2. And defending our friend and streamer over on another website who has actually come under some fire over the past week. We're standing in his corner on his side, and we're going to be talking about that towards the end of the show as well. Mm-hmm. So, hey guys, welcome to PopX, where science fiction meets pop culture. I'm your host, Joseph Burke, Central Florida seasoned comic book nerd and retro enthusiast. Now, we would like to welcome everyone joining us right now on our PopX.live chat room. Come hang out with us and join the conversation at PopXcast.com.
And I am Austin Burke, the Appalachian Geek at Heart. Be sure to head over to Google Play or iTunes after the show. Click that subscribe button. Catch up on some amazing shows from the PopX archive. And while you're there, we would certainly appreciate you guys leaving us a 5-star rating and review. If you missed episode 78, Solo, A Star Wars Story, spoiler review, and more, just like I did, check our official website at popxcast.com for this and other great past shows. Also, just a quick rundown from the show. Up next is a pop news, a news flash of this week's trending geeky headlines. And afterwards, we're going to dive into tonight's topics. We have so many different things going on tonight. Joe, like you said, this show is going to be absolutely cram-packed. And yeah, the news tonight, especially the Comcast and Disney news, is something that I really can't wait to dive into.
It's going to be fun. So we're going to have some really good conversation tonight. And I want to also pause just for a moment and say a very happy Father's Day to all the amazing fathers out there. Guys, I mean, especially I got to spend time with my father yesterday over at Disney Springs and having some dinner and just being with the man himself, my father, it just means a lot. And so whether you have that connection or whether you don't, hopefully today you found some solace and you've actually had a moment just to yourself and you've just kind of recollected. But if you've not had a good experience with your father, just know that PopX is in your corner. And we have 78 episodes where you can go back and just release some of that inner anger that I'm just messing with you. All right. So with all else said, we're going to dive into the PopX news. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
Extra, extra. Read all about it. This is PopX News coming to you live right here on PopXcast.com.
All right. Well, Austin Burke, why don't you lead out the news this week, my friend?
All right, we've got a big one. We are talking Disney's bid to buy 21st Century Fox's assets is in jeopardy, with Comcast making the all-cash bid for Fox. But as a likely bidding war breaks out between the two media giants, one analyst thinks that there might be another resolution to this ongoing saga. Barton Crockett, an analyst for capital market company B, Riley FBR, said that it's possible that Comcast and Disney will end up splitting Fox's assets. We would expect Disney to at least match Comcast by adding cash, which was the big thing with their deal, and Comcast to appease Murdoch's tax concerns by offering stock and some back and forth raising the deal bid. We would see this as the most sensible outcome, with Comcast getting Sky and Disney getting most of the rest. But Joe, my big question here is, we're comic book enthusiasts, so we're just concerned about what is Marvel going to play into this. Are we going to get that X-Men Fantastic Four crossover we've been wanting for so long? What's going to happen, Joe? I need you to
before we dive into this, also everybody that's joining us right now on our Facebook Live, I want to know what your thoughts are, so by the time we get to the end of this, we'll be able to go back and read and hopefully have some interaction with you live. To answer Austin's question, I'm kind of hoping that is the plan. I actually read the article where they were talking about, you know, splitting between the company and, you know, Comcast getting some of the assets and Disney getting more of the film videography assets that, Fox has acquired over the years. And a lot of people are confused about, well, how did Fox end up with X-Men and Fantastic Four in the first place? Well, in order to allow Marvel's properties back in the early, I'd say late 80s, early 90s, to allow those properties to be in a cartoon mode, Marvel signed over all the rights to the entire X-Men franchise, which is why you will never hear the word mutant in an MCU film. Think about that. So what has happened here, even though the deal was good then, we got an amazing X-Men cartoon that ran for like 6 seasons on Fox. I mean, I can hear the theme song in my head now. Yes. We got a flurry of X-Men films with Mr. Hugh Jackman and, you have Patrick Stewart and the whole gang. Now it's getting into this, now that those actors have seasonally moved on in their careers, we're getting into a point where, it's time for Marvel to kind of MCU and Feige to kind of step in and hopefully at some point try to acquire those rights to those characters back. Same thing has happened at Universal with the Incredible Hulk. You know, that's another property. And Sony and Spider-Man, that's another property. All of Spider-Man's heroes, all of Spider-Man's villains, everything that is Spider-Man was owned by Sony. So that's why there is such this weird debacle. I mean, Marvel was so excited to get a cartoon made of their property. They signed all those rights over. And now that we're in the Fast forward 25, 30 years later, in the cinematic era, they're like, why did we do that?
What did we do?
So it is very complicated and it is interesting, but I am in hopes that the plan is that Comcast will acquire Sky, which is more of the European network market, and a huge, huge thing, with the Sky network going on. And that would make more of sense with Comcast, as opposed to Comcast acquiring movie rights to characters. You know what I'm saying? Comcast is an internet and telecommunications company, first and foremost. And so, and they're affiliated with NBC Studios, which is another crazy conglomerate. But Austin, what do you think is going to happen?
It's interesting to me because, well, first off, what you were talking about with the deal, a lot of people don't know that. A lot of people are like, oh, we got Spider-Man, we've got Hulk, and everybody. I'm talking about the average moviegoer, but no, it was a big fiasco that's why Hulk hasn't had a standalone film since. The Incredible Hulk is because the entire Universal deal, and then getting Spider-Man over was a monumental thing for the MCU.
It was huge.
It was massive. And now you see with a movie like Into the Spider-Verse, that trailer was really cool. So Sony's got their own little thing going on with that, and then some more Spider-Man side characters. They have Venom coming out later this year. So those deals have worked out well. Now I'm glad we've had Fox doing what it's done, because we've got some stinkers, of course, but we got movies like Logan and Deadpool and Days of Future Past. I mean, we've had some fantastic films, but like you said, the old cast is kind of moving on. X-Men Apocalypse was just kind of the only thing that people really love right now is Deadpool and everything associated with it. So if Disney can get these rights, it scares me, because they've never really churned into R-rated territory, but we have to find a way. And they're smart. They know what they're doing.
I got to be honest with you, Austin. I would be willing to sacrifice a Deadpool film rating to have the rights of the characters come home.
Yes.
I know it's going to suck.
It will.
It's going to hurt.
Yeah.
But think of it in the long run. X-Men and Fantastic Four finally come home.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather have that in the long run than have one film that just kind of meh.
Yeah. And I agree with you. And that's really, I mean, I just don't see them doing an R-rated movie. So, and you know they're going to keep Deadpool.
Yeah.
But you know they're going to scale them back a little bit. And that's the thing that's kind of disappointing. But like you said, Fantastic Four, man, one of the greatest comic book series.
It's time for Reed Richards to come home and introduce the Silver Surfer and Galactus to the MCU.
What gets bigger than Thanos?
I mean, I'm telling you, Galactus. He eats worlds for a living. Yeah. That's what he does. So, all right. So we spent enough time on that topic. I mean, we could talk about this all day. It's such a buzzing topic right now in the world, especially in the Marvel world, and all eyes are on this. I mean, I've actually for the first time been watching CNN Money, just kind of following this progress. But we're moving on. All right, so Matt Murdock, also known as Daredevil, exists within the universe of the upcoming PlayStation 4 exclusive Marvel's Spider-Man. Now, word of Daredevil's confirmation comes by way of promotion material that was being passed around at the Sony Interactive Entertainment's, that's the E3 conference this past week. Now, it was noticed a legal ad in the game for Nelson and Murdock. Which is noticeably the name of the law firm that Matt Murdock and partner Foggy Nelson run. It is important to keep in mind that this doesn't confirm that Daredevil's in the game, only that he exists within the universe of this game, which for the first time would be where Sony and MCU and Netflix combine. So if he isn't in the game, it does leave the door open for him to make an appearance in a DLC or a future installment of the game. You think about it. If they have the character programmed as Spider-Man, why not just get a skin, change the abilities a little bit?
Yeah.
See what I'm saying? You can put on the Matt Murdock skin and actually be a vigilante going through Manhattan.
I like that.
So I'm excited. I'm actually really excited for this Star Wars video game. I mean, Spider-Man video game, because I was watching some of the trailer footage.
Oh
my gosh. It's like Batman Arkham Asylum, but in Marvel Comics. Yeah. I mean, it's a dark looking game too. I was actually, have you seen the trailers for this, Austin?
Joe, you know me. Like, I don't have a game system. I used to love playing games, but I've been out of it for so long, and it's so hard to do. First of all, I love Batman Arkham Asylum. And when I was young, the Spider-Man games, even like the movie games like Spider-Man 2 and all this stuff, I was like, yeah, I was all for that. Dude, this is like Legend of Zelda. I mean, look at the world. Look at the environment. Just everything. And it's just like comic book lovers glory on a video game. So I can't wait.
I'm with you. I mean, this is the game that I think everybody has finally envisioned for a Spider-Man video game.
Yes. It's what he's needed.
You know, they've tried it for years, and they had a couple of hits. This is the game where everything is interactive, and you get to explore the entire island of Manhattan.
Oh, my God.
So I'm just saying. All right, so moving along with this news here. Go ahead, mister.
All right, so we are moving from Marvel to DC, despite Jared Leto getting his own standalone Joker. It looks as though the origin movie from director Todd Phillips is still moving along nicely, and Warner Brothers is expecting to begin production as early as this fall. There are indeed two, count them, two Joker movies in development. One of them, as he revealed earlier this month, will see Leto reprise his role from Suicide Squad in the standalone film about the character. The other is the Phillips project, which has been talked about for some time, starring, now I love this, Joaquin Phoenix. I love that. The Clown Prince of Crime, and produced by, I love this too, Martin Scorsese. Just let that soak in for just a second. The movie will be a dark and gritty version of the character.
I'm sorry, you had me at Martin Scorsese. What the hell is going on?
Departed today, dude. This is
Martin Scorsese's. He's doing a Joker film.
Awesome. And so this movie is going to be a dark and gritty version of the character that shows his origins as a villain. And this 1980 set film will reportedly launch under a newly branded film banner. Joe, does this excite you?
A little bit of pee just came out. I'm not going to. No, I'm just for all of my kid. I have incontinence problems and I can't, or maybe not. Anyway, my gosh, really? Martin Scorsese and a Joker film?
Yeah.
You know what would make that deal even more sweeter? If Frank Miller got in on it on some of
production. God, with that dark and gritty.
Oh, come on. Bring it. I mean, you know, I like the Jared Leto. I think honestly, him and Harley Quinn was the only two things I liked out of Suicide Squad.
Yes,
A lot of people are on the fence about his portrayal of the Joker because everybody's riding back to, the Dark Knight trilogy, and then everybody automatically thinks it's Mr. Jack Nicholson and Heath Ledger in their roles. But you got to think Jared Leto had an insurmountable mountain to try to. He didn't want to top their performances.
Yeah,
wanted to do something different. So he brought him into the modern age. Mm-hmm. And I actually really like his Joker. His laugh sounds good.
Yes.
His demeanor.
I'm telling you, man, when he gets his shot, now he didn't have a lot of time in Suicide Squad, and that movie was a flaming turd. But when he gets his shot, I do believe he's going to deliver. And this is, here's the thing about this. Is they're creating a new subsection of films in the DC universe. These movies that aren't connected.
Well, even now the Batman origin film too.
Yes, and that's another thing. And they've already kind of confirmed that Ben Affleck is not going to be a part of that.
Yeah, it's going to be a younger individual doing the role.
I'm okay with this. It's like a comic book. It's like comic books.
Well, look at what they've done. And I know we're spending a little time harping on this, but we got to get this out. Look what they did with Wonder Woman. Okay, so that was a proper origin story film. Yeah. All right, from start to finish. We saw, Themyscira. We saw her as a child. I think this idea of going back and kind of doing a Gotham style, the Gotham, the television show, kind of doing that origin story style with Batman and with the Joker, kind of, all right, this is who they are now.
Yes.
This is what you're going to see in the future. And that's what happened with Iron Man.
I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that. You know, you start building it up. People will slowly start getting invested. Yeah. And DC, if it's done accurately, and I pray that Aquaman is good in December.
Yes,
holy cow. Or November. I'm just on the fence about it. But
yeah.
I'm a huge fan. Martin Scorsese has enough gumption to be able to take on a DC villain of that character and that magnitude with his filmography style.
Yeah. And he's an executive producer too. So his hands are going to be all over this. Yeah. And he handpicked, I mean, Todd Phillips is going to be the director, but Martin Scorsese is going to have a big old part in it.
Yeah.
But Todd Phillips, man, I don't know if you watched the movie War Dogs. He's the guy that did The Hangover.
Yeah.
And the movie War Dogs. And now those movies aren't like, woo, crazy, but they're very well directed. Mm-hmm. And that's his job here. His job is not to write. His job is not to produce. His job is to direct. And they are very well directed. He's handpicked by Martin Scorsese. So I'm excited for
you. And before we move on to the next topic, I want to Sean Hockney over in the chat room. Thank you, Sean, for being interactive. Two things she wanted to let us know. Did you guys hear that AT&T bought Warner Brothers? Yes,
that was huge.
We did. That was a huge acquisition. And actually, the federal government has delayed that so many years to sign off on it because it was a conglomerate type acquisition where AT&T, I mean, you think about it, that's huge. That means that Warner Brothers in Batman and all that is now under the AT&T.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. That's some crazy stuff right there. And the next thing she asked us, have we seen the Bumblebee trailer? Of course we've seen the Bumblebee trailer. Austin, do you want to share a quick 60 seconds on what you thought about Bumblebee? Now, I know Mike doesn't have the graphics for this. We're throwing Mike for a loop tonight. But that's
okay. Poor Mike. It's okay, Mike. It's okay. Okay, so you guys know how I feel about the Transformers movies, other than the first one and half of the third one. They're big. They're bad. I'm not going to say anything else.
It's poop.
They're bad.
They're poop.
But you bring in the director of Kubo and the Two Strings, a brilliant stop motion animated film. You boot Michael Bay, which is exactly what they did, and you give this trailer a Spielberg like feeling with the music and the
trailer music was legit, man.
Wasn't it good?
I loved
it. It sounded
like Hans Zimmer.
I know.
Like Hans Zimmer.
I know I'm giving it away, but I really dug it.
I'm excited.
I really dug it.
And Bumblebee looked like Bumblebee.
Yes.
He looked like Bumblebee. So,
Yeah.
So, Sean, we did see that, sweetheart. Thank you so much for bringing that up to us. And we do appreciate that so much. And, man, I'll tell you what, this is absolutely fantastic that I'm excited to see what they're going to be doing with the new Transformers. I just called Sean a sweetheart. I'm so sorry. but yeah, I guess, you know, you could be. You're Pop X's sweetheart. How about that? All right, moving on with the news here. We only got a couple more things here. So Cloak & Dagger premiered to praise from both fans and critics alike last week. Now, the official ratings for the two-hour debut are in, and the latest Marvel TV series scored the best premiere for Freeform in over 2 years.
Whoa.
Now, that's big. We're talking Daredevil Netflix-style stuff. It premiered with 1.64 million viewers. Those numbers also make the series the network's most watched drama since Pretty Little Liars series finale almost 1 year ago. Now, it has earned a certified fresh distinction from the reviewer aggregator over on Rotten Tomatoes, or I hate that website, as well as 86% positive reviews. 86%.
86?
I mean, what Inhumans was like, what, two?
Yeah, well, it should have been.
But anyway, but Marvel's Cloak & Dagger airs Thursdays on Freeform. Now, I actually have seen the first two episodes, and I'm halfway through number three, and I am enjoying.
Good.
I am. Have you seen it yet, Austin?
I have not. I've heard good things. I didn't know it scored that well. That's fantastic, though. I mean, that is big for Marvel TV, man. That's exciting.
It's huge. And you know what? If you've not seen Cloak & Dagger, yes, there is some teen.
Of course.
You know, 13 Reasons Why style teen drama in there. But blessed be the fruit.
Amen, brother.
I just had to say that as a, you know, Handmaid's Tale kind of throwback. But I'm a huge fan of Cloak & Dagger. I like it. I dig it.
That is cool.
It's a good
show.
That
is cool, man.
It's something I think that I've set it on my DVR and I plan to watch the entire series.
Heck yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, that gets
it's
me
that good.
Up.
It's that good.
Okay, awesome. Well, we will move on to another Marvel Studios topic, and that is Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah.
It is set for a release in the Panoramic ScreenX format as announced at Cine Europe in Barcelona. Now, Ant-Man and the Wasp follows Black Panther in taking to the ScreenX format, which is the world's first multi-projection system that provides a 270-degree film viewing experience, which is really cool. It's something that I would love to eventually see. Watching Black Panther move through Wakanda in the panoramic format was a thrilling experience, and we are excited to see Ant-Man the Wasp magnify in this transformative, bigger-than-life format for the audiences, said Victoria Alonso, Executive Vice President of Physical Production, Marvel Studios. In a statement, the innovative and immersive environment created by ScreenX is truly amazing and wonderful. It's a way to enjoy a film like Ant-Man and the Wasp. I mean, that's Jeff Foreman, Senior Vice President of International Theatrical Sales, the Walt Disney Studios. We look forward to fans being able to connect and experience the film in ways that they have never imagined. Now, this is, I don't really know a lot about this personally, but seeing a movie, for me, I would have to go watch it once on a normal screen just to, you know, so I can, but experiencing something like this for the first time on a screen like this, looking from left to right, that would be interesting.
I don't know how they did it. I don't know. I mean, Mike was telling me about that. He said, could you imagine going into a cinema where you're not just looking at a single square on a wall, but you're surrounded by the film?
Yeah.
You know what? It's kind of eerie, but I think that we're going to be getting into the area where we go into an IMAX theater and we're going to be seeing it in IMAX VR.
Oh.
And, you know, and the action will be taking place right here in front of you, but you, when you look around, you're going to see more of the dimensions and space. Like, could you imagine Guardians in that kind of a setting?
Joe, you got me hooked onto VR when I was in Orlando. I will just say that much. So this everything you're saying right now is music to my ears. I know. That would be incredible.
But this right here, ScreenX, I mean, I think it's going to be awesome. I would love to personally see it. I'm on board with it. So
yeah.
Bring it.
Sounds awesome.
Orlando doesn't have anything like that right now. So
yeah. That's awesome.
All right. The last one of the week, and then we're going to got a hit it of the week. Marvel's Avengers Infinity War has officially joined the most exclusive clubs in box office history, becoming just the fourth film ever to earn a $2 billion at the box office. Oh, my gosh. I guess Thanos finally. Look at that. Nice. Avengers Infinity War achieved the milestone 48 days in theaters and 1 day longer than it took Avatar to achieve the same goal. Now, Avengers Infinity War is the fourth highest grossing movie of all time. Of all time. Behind the only other three members of that $2 billion mark, which is the Avatar at $2.78 billion. Titanic, $2.18 billion, and Star Wars The Force Awakens at $2.06 billion. Now, Avengers Infinity War was the fastest movie to ever reach $1 billion worldwide at the worldwide box office. And it's the sixth Marvel Studios film to earn at least $1 billion and is the highest grossing superhero film of all time. Drop the freaking mic. Let's end the stream and go home. Thanos has screwed it all up. Yeah.
So a lot of people are still at this point after crossing 2 billion, giving this movie flack for not reaching Black Panther domestically, because it's still about 40 million behind Black Panther. But you look at what Black Panther had competing against it at the time it came out. Dude, it had a clear path to victory for about 2 months.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now look at what Infinity War is going up against. Deadpool 2, Incredibles 2, Solo. Every week something is coming out, and it still managed to be only 40 million behind it.
I'm telling you, it's
incredible.
It's insane. And it just goes to show you the heart behind what Kevin Feige and the crew over at MCU have done in creating. I mean, you got to be a fan first. You know, you got to be a fan first to enjoy the films that you're creating. And there's kind of part of me that thinks that Kevin Feige is seeing his childhood come to life. Because he's such a fan. And you think about Guardians and what's going on over there. They're literally seeing all this come to life. It's just amazing. I love it.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And so last but not least, we have the Hit It of the Week. And so I'll be right back as we play that. Don't go nowhere.
And now it's time for PopX's Hit It of the Week.
All right, so Mike and I actually had a chance to go over to Orlando Science Center. This is something I just found out, and I wish I had some images for you, but I don't know, Mike may have one or two, I don't know. But there is a really cool exhibit. It's called the Hall of Heroes. Now, this is not just exclusive to Orlando. This is an exhibit that is traveling every 3 to 6 months to different cities across the United States. In it, it's this is so awesome. You get to take your child in here and they learn the history of comics from the Golden Age, the Bronze Age, and the Silver Age. And it's so cool, and they get to learn about who is Stan Lee, who is Jack Kirby, who is Neil Adams, Todd McFarlane. I mean, names that we know every day because we're adults, but you take a five-year-old in there, a six- or eight-year-old, they're mind-blown. And there's massive statues where they can do, like, family op photos and stuff. It is so cool. Now, if you follow me on Instagram at Joseph Burke Arts, S-J-O-S-E-P-H-B-U-R-K-E-A-R-T-S, if you follow me, you can go back and see posts that I made from this past week, this past Monday, where Mike and I actually went to check out the exhibit. Now, if you're curious where the exhibit's going to be, go over to this website, and you can see if it's going to be coming to your city. And if it's not too far away and it's maybe a quick day drive, I would highly recommend doing it because it's a really cool experience. The Hall of Heroes Science Museum traveling exhibit, go to stage9design.com. Mm-hmm. On there, you will see a link for Hall of Heroes exhibit. And it's truly awesome. I highly recommend you go and take your kids out for a great evening and just learn about the history of comics. And they even cover San Diego Comic-Con cosplay and Funko Pops. Pretty cool. Awesome. It is pretty cool. So if you're curious about what the pictures look at, check out my personal Instagram at Joseph Burke Arts, and that's pretty much it. So, Austin.
Oh.
What are you ready for? Oh. Are you ready for today's main topic of origin stories?
Ooh, I like origin stories.
Yes. Well, we actually have a really cool origin stories for you. About a month ago, we posted this poll over on our Facebook page, and it was kind of one of those things, all right, since these characters are current and relevant,
yes,
which one would you want? So the poll was, you want an origin stories of Captain Marvel or Negasonic Teenage Warhead? Now, I will say this, after about a week of the poll and when it ended, the results, and a lot of you voted. Thank you so much for voting on this. We had, I think, like 100 votes come in.
Cool.
And
wow,
it was 50-50 down the middle. I mean, literally. I mean, you take that many people voting, and it was literally a 50-50 split. Not 49-51, wow. 50-50. So you know what? We're going to do it. Origin stories are going on right now. We're going to do Captain Marvel and Negasonic Teenage Warhead in the same podcast. So when you go to the theater this coming spring in March 2019, you said, oh, you know what? I listen to Pop X. I know what's up with Captain Marvel. I know her origin story. So you know you won't be in the dark. You know what to expect. You got it? Good. So here we go. Captain Marvel is going to be hitting it out right now. All right. So Captain Marvel, in the 1960s, Carol Danvers made her comic book debut as a beautiful and highly capable young woman who had managed to overcome a gender typing and excel in challenging military occupations normally dominated by men. That was a big topic in the 60s. So Marvel, again, incorporating pop culture into their literature. And she was already an ace fighter pilot. We've already seen pictures of Brie Larson in a plane. Get it? All right, so Brie Larson's playing Captain Marvel, if you didn't know that. So a former officer of the U.S. Air Force and a former CIA agent, that's where S.H.I.E.L.D. comes in, when she was hired as the head of security of NASA headquarters at Cape Canaveral, Florida.
Ooh.
All right. So one of Carol's co-workers at NASA was Dr. Phillips Lawson, who was secretly an alien Kree super agent named Mar-Vell. Now, Kree, if you don't know, is a race of aliens, and they are shape-shifting. They are cosmic beings, okay? So when a dormant Kree sentry robot that NASA had been studying activated one day and went berserk, Mar-Vell defeated the rampaging robot and saved Carol's life in the process, with the press dubbing the mysterious new superhero Captain Marvel. Carol became drawn to Mar-Vell, and a romance developed between the two. Now, a Kree enemy of Mar-Vell's named Young Roggs soon learned of the relationship and kidnapped Carol as bait to lure in Mar-Vell into a trap. Now, when Mar-Vell came to the rescue, Young Roggs deployed forbidden Kree technology called Psych Magnetron. Now, that's a cool name right there, in an attempt to destroy his enemy. But during the battle, the psych magnetron, which had the power to turn thoughts into reality, exploded, and Captain Marvel shielded Carol from its radiation with his own body, causing Carol to absorb much of his own genetic entity, his own template. So as the thing exploded, he stood in front of her. His DNA went through and transformed into Carol Danvers.
Wow.
And so pretty interesting stuff, right? And so that instantly made Carol an equal to Mar-Vell. And her DNA became a perfect synthesis of Kree and human genes.
Wow.
Stop. So, and there's going to be a point in the movie where we are going to see, we already know that Jude Law has been cast as the role of Mar-Vell, right?
Oh, perfect casting. Okay.
So we're going to be seeing that come to fruition. There's going to be, at some point, she's going to be, you know, this military girl. A battle's going to happen, and some kind of explosion's going to go off. It may not be this psych magnetron, but something will happen, and his DNA will pass into her.
I can't wait.
And now, after Carol recovered from the explosion, she had gained superhuman powers, much like those of Captain Marvel. Now, Captain Marvel was an alter ego. Captain Marvel was actually a dude in the original comic books, if you remember. Marvel, she had an alter ego, and she even wore a costume pattern after that of the Kree hero. We saw her in the green costume and yes. some of the things that you've seen online already. She became known as Miss Marvel. So I would say in the movies, when she has the green uniform, she may even be called that.
Oh,
and
cool.
Soon established herself as a powerful superhero in her own right. Now, we're getting close to the finish of her story here. The originally non-powered Carol Danvers was created by none other than writer Roy Thomas and artist Gene Colan in 1968. So she goes back quite a ways for a Captain Marvel story in the 13th issue of Marvel Superheroes. Now, she became a supporting character in Captain Marvel's own title, where the idea was born that Carol had the potential to one day play a starring role. Now, writers Roy Thomas and Archie Goodwin laid down the groundwork for what eventually became Miss Marvel's superhero origin. And by the 70s, Marvel decided that, you know what, it wanted a powerful female lead superhero who could carry her own title, her own weight, and represented a modern liberated woman. And none other than Carol Danvers. Pretty cool.
Like,
now, this came to fruition in 1977 when Carol Danvers, now fully powered as Miss Marvel, finally made her debut as her heroine in her own title and the first issue, Miss Marvel, which was written by Jerry Conway and drawn by John Buscema, son of legendary Marvel writer Sal Buscema.
Wow.
Writer Chris Claremont, does that name ring a bell?
Yeah.
X-Men franchise, hello, took over further development on her character as the series progressed, and she was responsible for writing many of the key events that ultimately defined her as a character. Now, towards the end of Ms. Marvel's original series, artist Dave Cochran designed a distinctive new costume for her that became her signature look, as you see right there on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is her powers exactly? And how is, when I read these off, you're going to think in the back of your head, okay, she's going to lay it to Thanos. Okay? This is why she is such a key part in the future of the Avengers. Listen to this. Among her powers and abilities include super strength. Okay, that's a given.
Yeah.
Super speed. Okay. Super agility, super stamina, invulnerability to space, and can take tremendous amounts of punishment before even having a scratch. Okay, it gets crazier. So, invulnerability to space. She can literally fly out of our atmosphere into space and not be affected by the cold or the lack of oxygen.
Okay.
Think about that. All right, now she absorbs energy absorption. So if Thanos tries to use a ring on her, or a gem or whatever you want to call it, energy projection, so she can not only absorb it, she can dish it right back out as the same energy she just absorbed. That's pretty cool. Regeneration. She is a Deadpool, a walking Deadpool.
Okay.
Danger sense, like Spidey's sense. She knows when harm or danger is getting ready to come before it happens. All right. So she is a, you can see, Carol Danvers is going to be a huge asset to the Avengers. Minor, this one blew me away. Minor molecular control. She can get down to the very DNA and control your DNA. Okay. The last but not least, and this is where I think is going to be really crazy. She even is cosmically aware, like the Silver Surfer, which means that she, Silver Surfer, if you know anything about him, he's a cosmic being with cosmic powers, but he's cosmically aware of everything that's going on in the universe and multiverses at the same time, which is why Silver Surfer is Galactus's henchman to go and find new worlds for him to devour. Hmm. So Carol Danvers is cosmically aware of the universe and what's coming.
Wow.
And so there you go. I mean, so that will be in a nutshell. That's all you really need to know going into the cinema in March for Captain Marvel. Now, Austin, what are your thoughts on Captain Marvel? I want to hear. Did you know all of this?
I didn't know. I knew the majority of those powers, but like the cosmic awareness,
yeah,
the molecular control. I mean, there was a rumor that came out recently, and I don't know if this is true, but there's a rumor that she can actually, she's powerful enough to move planets.
I've heard that rumor, yes. Yeah.
And
well, if she can control molecules, that means she can control the mass of matter around the molecules.
Dude, she's literally the cheat code. I mean, she is.
She is.
Oh, I mean, this is what's going to come in and be the difference maker for the Avengers. And
up, down, down, left, right, BA, start. That's it.
Basically, man, there's so much to her that a lot of people don't know, and they're going to figure a lot of it out.
Well, her origin story film is going to really dive into that a lot as we get to see her powers develop. And probably, you know, she's not going to have her full powers potential by the time she faces Thanos, but she's going to be pretty powerful. But, you know, that's going to be the kicker right there. That's going to be the one that kind of, all right, she's the Adam Warlock of the Avengers 4 title. So
yes, absolutely. And Brie Larson, I mean, what
phenomenal actress!
She's phenomenal.
So
Oscar nominated.
Has Marvel ever made a mistake in their casting so far?
I can't think of one.
I'm talking about the MCU. I'm not talking about
other stuff. But MCU, I can't think of one. No. I can't.
You think about it. Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr. Chris
That's
Evans,
good.
Hemsworth.
Somebody comment and tell me a mistake that Marvel's made in the casting, because I...
Benedict Cumberbatch? I mean, I think that guy was born for Doctor Strange.
Oh my God, yes.
But, I mean, even Paul Rudd.
Even Paul Rudd is Ant-Man. The guy's phenomenal.
Great Ant-Man.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
I think it's going to be phenomenal. I think people are going to be blown away by this film.
I do too.
Yeah.
It's
going to be the Black Panther of 2019. You wait and watch.
100%. It's going to make all of the money.
Yeah, it's going to
make every bit of it.
Well, Austin, do you want to tell us about Negasonic Teenage? What?
Oh, yes. So this is somebody that we have been talking about for probably the last month, because she was back in a Deadpool movie.
Yeah.
She was one of my favorite characters from the first, and she was really great in the second. I wanted to see more of her, but we still got a good little chunk. And this is a mutant girl who lived in Genosha. So, Joe, how would you pronounce her last name? So it's Ellie.
Filmister.
Filmister?
Filmister.
Filmister?
Filmister.
Filmister.
Don't say the L. It's like Phil, but Filmister.
Okay. Filmister.
There you go.
Okay. Interesting. So Ellie Filmister, which I don't... Do they say that in the movies at all?
Ellie. They call her Ellie.
Just call her Ellie. Okay.
Yeah, Ellie was in Deadpool 2, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So Ellie Filmister, that's an interesting name, was a student in... Now here's another character you guys know from the movies, if not the comics, Emma Frost's telepathy class. Gothic in appearance, with pure white skin and long black hair, Filmister appeared to often complain, you can see that in the movies, about the visions that her powers gave her. Due to the morbid and whiny nature of her powers, Filmister was disliked by her teacher. While Filmister moaned about how she experienced the same nightmare 50 times the previous night, Frost considered the girl with disdain and contempt. So she went on to say that she had the same nightmare during class, but no one in her class realized that she was predicting the immediate future. So there's a lot more to Negasonic's powers than people give her credit for.
Blowing up like a nuclear warhead. There's a lot of stuff there that, you know, Deadpool and Fox can actually explore in the next film.
Absolutely. And that's the thing is, especially if they make an X-Force movie and she somehow plays into that. Well, they are making an X-Force movie. But she was created by Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely and first appeared in the new X-Men issue 115 in 2001. So she's a fairly recent character to be appearing in a movie, which is interesting to me. She was the gothic-looking girl with powers to foresee terrible events. So that's another one that they don't really hit on in the movies, such as the death of herself and almost all of the mutants on the island of Genosha. Now that is a tragic power to have. So after years of absence, NTW returned with a completely different look and attitude in the pages of Deadpool and the Mercs for Money, Volume 2, Issue 1. The character was likely revived and reinvented due to her success in the Deadpool movie from 2016. So the movie kind of gave her a little kick in the comic books.
It fueled her up.
Which is really cool, and to more resemble her movie counterpart. So now she looks more like she does in the films, which is just a, wow, that actor really did do a wonderful job of portraying her.
However,
Ellie had a more lingering impression in the mind of Emma Frost. It transpired that her secondary mutation had been offered to her by Cassandra. Cassandra Nova, moments before the destruction of Genosha. Now, Frost had no recollection of the agreement. She had accepted Nova's offer in exchange for storing her personality in the back of her mind. This is very
psychological
mutant
warfare going on here.
Absolutely, and I love that. I think, heck, she could have her own movie.
She could have her own film because there's a lot of stuff there.
Wow. Okay, this is cool. So later, the X-Men came under attack from the new Hellfire Club, another name that you guys have heard. Its members included Sebastian Shaw in his role as Black King, Cassandra Nova as the White King, the White Queen, known as Perfection, an image of Emma Frost as she appeared during her life with the Hellfire Club, and Ellie was the new Black Queen. So we've got Negasonic doing a little...
There we go.
What you doing, girl?
That's
okay.
It.
So more confident than she had been in life, Themister had chosen the codename Teenage Negasonic Warhead. As a member of the new Hellfire Club, she attacked members of the X-Men, notably Kitty Pryde. Negasonic Teenage Warhead later dreamt that Kitty Pryde was phasing down through the school's lower levels. Just as with her dreams on Genosha, it transpired that Ellie was predicting what was actually happening. Mm-hmm. So once again, guys, her powers are way more than just
has lucid, vivid dreams that haunt her until the event happens.
Wow. I want to see her explore it a little more, man. This is some very good stuff.
It's almost like Legion. She's kind of on the level of Legion, if you think about it.
She would belong in that show.
She could easily get in that show.
I love that.
They should do that.
So, like the rest of the Hellfire Club, Ellie wasn't actually in the mansion. She had been a psychic creation from Emma Frost's mind, the part of her mind that was controlled by the psychic remnants of Cassandra Nova. I like Cassandra Nova as a character very much so, especially in the comics. This was why Cyclops was unable to harm any of the Hellfire Club members, including Ellie, when he appeared to fire with a pistol. Now, her chosen code name, Negasonic Teenage Warhead, is taken from the 1995 music single by rock band Monster Magnet.
They had a song in 95 and it was called Teenage Negasonic Warhead.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that. That feels like it's a joke right out of Deadpool.
But I mean, whoever wrote that had to actually be a fan of that. So
That is interesting.
Yeah, very interesting, actually.
So we've already talked a little bit about her powers, but let's talk about the amalgamation, like what they are as a whole. Precognition and vivid predictive dreams, like Joe said, with an impeccable accuracy of seeing the future. Repetition of dreams and lucid visions before major disasters, telepathy, enhanced constitution of superhuman strength, speed and durability, which is what we see in the Deadpool
films. Yeah.
And she's very powerful. I mean, she only gets a little bit in Deadpool 2, but what we see is she could become very powerful by the end of X-Force.
And, you know, so it would be really interesting, like, if, I mean, I know we're talking hypothetically here, Austin, but if, what happens if in Deadpool 3, they kind of explore that dream power a little bit more. And, you know, just kind of like what happened with the Sonovia Accords in the MCU, maybe they could do something like that, you know, in the X-Men. And X-Force, you know, she keeps having this, and they're, you know, the whole team is trying to figure out what's wrong with her. Then all of a sudden it starts happening. And they're like, what are we going to do now? You know,
sort of like a Dark Phoenix saga without all of the pretty murdering, much. Just a smaller scale. But wow, that is, man, there's so much. I learned so much just now, but hope that's everyone else learned a lot as well.
That's why we do these origin stories, Austin, because, you know, these secondary characters or these characters that we don't know about, it's so good to dive into them and just kind of explore. Because now I know that you feel good about Captain Marvel going into the film now. You know what she can do. And even with Teenage Negasonic Warhead, you see the possibility that can happen with her in the Deadpool franchise as well. So there's a lot of stuff that they can use. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool to understand all of that. So out of the two, which one, I mean, I know it's kind of weird, but do you have a favorite between Captain Marvel or Warhead?
Well, we've not seen Captain Marvel on screen yet.
Yes, true. Yeah.
Just from the comics, I mean, I've always been a big fan of what her character stands for a little bit. And her being the saving grace of the MCU, I would probably say Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
But Negasonic, man, she's a fantastic addition to those movies.
Absolutely.
She's so good. And a character that people need to know.
Yeah. And so I hope you guys enjoyed that. That is this week's origin stories. You voted for it, guys. A split 50-50 decision. And I know that we didn't go into the story arcs or dive into all. I mean, if you really do one, we could do an hour alone on Captain Marvel. You know, Ellie has not had the long run that Captain Marvel has. She was only introduced in 2001, whereas Carol Danvers was in 1968. So there's a huge, you know, you can get, Carol Danvers has been in Civil War. She has fought against the Hellfire Club. She has, there's so many things. She's went head to head with, what is it? Arachnid, which is one of the spider villains. So she has been all over the place.
Wow.
So there's a lot of stuff you can dive into that. And want to give a shout out to Lindsay Badger, who's hanging out with us over in the chat room. So it's so cool. And she said it, a solid foundation of knowledge about these characters. It makes the movies a little bit more enjoyable going in because you're not blind about the character. All right. So let's move on here with the next portion of the show, which is our Incredibles 2 film review. Oh my God. I just saw the movie 2 days ago and I am mind blown. Austin, I want you to share some thoughts. And I think Mike's going to come on here. Once I give my rant, I'll let Mike go on after you then. That way he can.
Okay.
Go ahead. Give us some stuff.
Well, I'll keep it concise because I could talk about this movie all day. So I grew up with the first Incredibles. I was 9 years old when the movie came out and I watched it over and over and over. I mean, it is to me what, you know, it is that form of nostalgia. So I love it. And then I get older and I'm like, wow, that is a great movie. Because, you know, as a kid, sometimes you watch movies and they're not great, but you love them because they hold something to you.
Right.
But then I grow up and I see its critic score and I see how much other people love it. And then you look at the box office right now and clearly people enjoyed the first one.
Didn't Mike just tell us that it was $235 million domestic?
They keep going like, they keep going.
It's,
you know, and
it's the largest Pixar opening ever.
Yes. And the previous animated films opening was Finding Dory at 135. So it just like crushed it, right?
Wow. What did Frozen get?
Frozen's opening, I believe, was like right at 100 million. But Frozen went on to earn over 1 billion.
Well, it became an overnight hit. Yeah.
It did. And people went back and saw it. So look at what Incredibles 2 is doing now. I cannot wait to see the total from this film.
It's going to be fun.
It is. And that's the perfect word, Joe. Incredibles 2, I never thought it could match up to the first one. If you would have told me it was this good going in, I would have laughed and said, it's not going to be. But you know what? This movie felt like a natural progression between movie 1 and movie 2. It's exactly where it would have picked up 14 years ago, but since they waited so long, the animation got better, the style of filmmaking got better. Brad Bird was able to sit down and literally think about this script for how many years did he have? And I think he did, now I'm not going to say a perfect job, but he did an almost perfect job. I don't think this sequel could have been any better. Mm. And my only big problem here is I predicted what was going to happen with the villain the second something happens. The second.
Yeah, should we give a spoiler tag and talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, let's go ahead. Let's give a spoiler tag.
We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Danger. You are about to enter a Pop-X spoiler alert. Beyond this point, there is no return. You have been warned.
You have been warned, Austin. You're free to talk about
all
stuff
right.
now.
So we're talking Screenslaver. First off, I think that name for the villain is absolutely hilarious.
It belongs
in the Incredibles universe. But, you know, the second our female sister of the guy over the corporation walks in, I'm like, she's the villain. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I will say this. I did believe it was both of them. I thought they were both in on it together.
Yeah.
And that did kind of throw me for a loop a little bit. So
what's the actor that plays the tycoon? I hear him on Better Call Saul. Saul Goodman.
I know.
It's killing me.
I know his
but
name.
But I kind of felt that whole relationship was kind of, it was too perfect.
It was a bit obvious.
Yeah.
That's really... Out of all my, I'm usually critiquing movies and whatnot. That's my only big flaw is the entire thing about the villain, even though it did.
Bob Odenkirk.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. He was even great in a movie, The Post, that came out last year. He's a phenomenal actor. Yeah. But I loved his movements. I loved the movements of the characters. I just loved the look, what they did with the shadows and the lighting. And then you have Giacchino's score coming back. I mean, just the music. My God. Yeah. My God. The music
was awesome in this film.
It was, dude. It's one of the best superhero theme songs I've ever heard in my life. It's phenomenal. But I think this movie was so much fun. Jack-Jack and even Violet, man. Violet got a chance to shine. Dude, Jack-Jack scenes. I'll let you talk about that, Joe.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Well, hold your thoughts because I want to make sure we do a review and I want Mike to get up here on camera too. Now, I want to be really quick. I think the thing that stole it for me was the raccoon fight scene with Jack-Jack. I swear to you, I was laughing and rolling in my chair. Mike was sitting right beside me here and we actually went and saw the film on Friday night together as a family. He brought his kids and I brought Alex was with me as well. And oh my God, I was just sitting there like bawling, like it was just like, oh my God, this is so funny. Probably one of the best moments I've seen in a Pixar film in a long time.
100%.
I mean, it was so funny. 100%. But, and of course, I love the little ones, darling.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Edna, it's good to see Edna back, darling. Yes. It was so good. There was nothing. Now, you know, in traditional child storytelling fashion, you know, there was that one moment where you kind of knew that something was a little up with Screenslaver and you was like, okay, that's too easy for him and his sister to be here. Mm-hmm. You know, but you got to remember though, the audience is targeted for a child.
And I kind of liken it to a Marvel movie. I mean, the Marvel, do so well is they focus, not lately. I mean, lately they've killed their villains. Awesome. But usually they focus on their heroes. They make this story about them. And then the villain is just kind of, he's there. And that's kind of what The Incredibles 2 did here. Yeah. And I think it worked because that focusing on what Bob was doing at home and then what Helen was doing outside of home, I thought was a beautiful, just a balance.
Yes, it was. It was. And it was, you know what was cool about it? It was a real topic.
Family.
It was about family and they weren't, I mean, it was a surprise. There was some adult stuff in this film as well. There was
a bit of cursing too.
A little bit of language. And, you know, it was weird seeing Elastigirl having a drink with, you know, Screenslaver. And I'm like, I was like, wait, that's a cocktail. What?
That's what Pixar does so well, man. They make the movies for kids, but they're like, you know what? Parents are going to be taking their kids. Yeah. So we're going to make a movie about them too.
I think I was watching your review with you and Madison, your wife, and you had said something that, you know, we grew up with this film.
Yes.
And 14 years later, we're now adults watching the second film.
Yes.
I remember that comment from your review. Uh-huh. And that's very true. Because a lot of us now in our late 20s, early 30s, And yeah, it just makes sense. And so
we want
Yeah, I would like a little something for us, a little je ne sais quoi, you know.
And even going back and watching the first one, you have Helen believing that Bob is cheating on her. I didn't catch that as a kid, but I catch it now, and that's what this movie does so well.
Yeah.
Second one.
Too. Mike, where are you at? You want to come in here and chime in on this?
Mike.
Where's Mike? There's Mike. Hi. What's up, Mike?
There I am.
There you are. So what do you think about Incredibles 2, buddy?
Well, first I want to thank you for throwing me in front of that freight train called Austin Burke Movie Review first. It's kind of hard to top that.
Oh, man.
But yeah, this movie was great. It kind of threw me at the beginning because I thought this was going to be the Underminer story.
Oh, yeah.
A few minutes of that, and then that was the end of it.
Yeah.
But this movie, unfortunately, took 14 years to come around. Hopefully it's not another 14 before they do release another one.
Yeah.
But you can definitely tell the animation was greatly improved over, Pixar's a Render Man project. That develops every year, and you definitely see an improvement over the years.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I was definitely thrilled. This movie was thrown right to the top of my Pixar favorites.
Same here.
It was definitely an enjoyable story. And yes, the fight scene with Jack and the raccoon was great.
Was that not awesome, man? I could have like watched that like three times in a row. It was so clever.
Yeah, it was just nonstop action. And Pixar, as usual, does in a phenomenal job. I've never seen a bad Pixar movie yet.
No.
And just to kind of give a little... credit to the short at the beginning. That was very entertaining.
That was heartfelt.
Little dumpling. And Pixar was known for that, and they make phenomenal shorts and as well as their movies. But I definitely really enjoyed this movie. It just kept me going all the way to the end.
Absolutely. And you know what? One of the things too, Mike, I really enjoyed seeing on this is actually the textures on their suits. You can see it's just like how it shimmered a little bit, and it was just like, oh man, you didn't get that in the first one, of course, because the animation was 14 years ago. But what was your favorite scene, Mike?
I'd have to go with Jack and the raccoon. That has been very, I laughed really hard at that. I thought it was hysterical.
Yeah, Lindsay's talking about the animated short over here in the chat room. She's like, no, she ate her baby. No one talked about that. Lindsay,
it's a metaphorical
for her little dumpling, her child. Yeah. Come on. But absolutely. Mike, let's give our review of Incredibles. So let's start with Austin, then I'll go, and then I want Mike to finish this up. Austin, what's your review on it? Let's do 1 out of 10.
Okay, 1 out of 10. I'm going to go with a 9.4. My only problem, like I said, was a little bit of predictability. Otherwise, this movie is, like Mike said, it's one of the best Pixar movies. It's not as deep as something like an Up or even like a Ratatouille, but it doesn't have to be. That's not what this movie's about. It's about being a fantastic superhero story, and that's exactly what this was. And while I don't like it as much as the original, the original's in my top 5 movies of all time.
Oh yeah!
So I'm so high. It's one of my favorite films of the year. So it's fantastic.
All right. I would say probably for me a solid 9. Mm. And the reason I say that is because I would love, since it's a superhero franchise and they are owned conglomeratedly by the same company, it would have been cool to just maybe had a quick nob or a little cameo from our one and only Mr. Stan Lee or something like that.
Cool.
Just to kind of make it all congruent. It's a superhero franchise. I'm not actually putting that up as my main thing, but it would have been cool. It would have been a nice nod for the Marvel fanboys like myself. I thought it was just a solid film from beginning to end. Just great. And there was nothing that I could say negative about it. And, that's it. Mike, what's your score?
I'm going to go with 9.8 on this. I thoroughly enjoyed this. I think it was just as good as the first one, or to me, I think a little bit better. The downfall that I had to wait 14 years for it, and it was kind of threw me off with the Underminer story. I thought it would have been, I would have liked to have seen where that continued on and just disappeared.
Underminer.
Other than that, I didn't really have, much of gripe. Love the animation. Pixar never disappoints when it comes to the animation.
Right. Absolutely.
I just love this movie.
Well, before I forget it, happy Father's Day, Mike.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, man. Sure. I had the blessing of hanging out with your two lovely kids this weekend, so it was pretty awesome. Cool. All right. Well, we have one more topic to discuss tonight, and this is one near and dear to our hearts. Mike, do you want to give a little – well, let me open it up, and I'll let Mike give some of the details. One of the individuals that's been on our podcast a couple of times before, Michael French from Retro Blasting. Great guy. We love him to pieces. And we could have Michael on our podcast literally every week and just be perfectly okay with it. He's such a down-to-earth guy. But this past week, he was on another podcast, and they were discussing some Star Wars stuff. And some comments were said on the podcast, and Michael didn't really say anything about it or on the topic of it. He just kind of kept his cool and kind of tried to steer the conversation away from what they were talking about. But at the end of it, he was considered a racist for the comments that he made. Now, Mike, do you mind telling us a little bit about what happened and what was said?
It wasn't so much for the comments he made. It was based, I'm still trying to kind of wrap my head around it. It's basically the comments he didn't make. He didn't really say anything when a certain comment was made.
Right.
And like I said, I'm just still trying to kind of process it all. I've been reading and trying to get the full gist of it. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to listen to the podcast in question. But yeah. I just want to say that I back that group, Michael and Melinda. I've met those people a bunch of times at different conventions. And they are the most sincere, genuine people I've ever met. I could never fathom, you know, out of all the YouTube videos he has, the guy is very outgoing. He tells it like it is, but you know, he I could never imagine. This just bothers me so much. I'm just kind of at a loss for words because that this group would be, you know, targeted that way. And to me, I find that disgraceful. And these are two people, individuals that have a passion for what they do, and then to be, you know, their name to be drummed through the mud, and it's just not a good situation. Yeah. And I still plan on reaching out to them. This has been about a week that I've known about this, but you know, I'm going to let them know that I am. I support them. We support them, and I'll continue to support them. And
yeah,
anytime there's conventions coming up, I'll be there. And the last few years, I've gone to Dragon Con, which is our biggest convention on the East Coast compared to San Diego Comic-Con, and I work my schedule around their panels.
Yeah.
And I'll continue to do so, and these are great people, and to be put down like this, to be dragged through the mud, that is just a disgrace, you know, by the people that are running that podcast. And, you know, like you said, we could have them on every week.
Yeah.
And the guy's full of, you know, knowledgeable information. Like I say, he tells it like it is, and you know, unfortunately, it doesn't, you know, line up with what everybody else believes. But as far as I'm concerned, you know,
mm-hmm.
Like I said, he's just very down to earth and very respectable. Both Michael and Linda are both respectable people.
Yeah,
and it's a shame that they've had to go through this and endure this.
Well, I think Michael, you know, first and foremost, and then PopX usually doesn't do this kind of format, guys. This is just something at the end of the podcast that we want to discuss because we're in the corner of our friend. We're his ally. And we know him because he's been on our podcast so many times before. But I do want to say that it's bothersome because we live in a time now where someone with good moral character, good upright standing, and something can be said that can literally destroy everything that they've tried to build.
Mm-hmm.
And that hurts. That hurts a lot. And so to Michael and his wife and from all of us here at PopX, we want you to know that we love you, man, and that we're in your corner. We love everything that Retro Blasting is doing. We love everything that you're going to continue to do. And we know beyond the shadow of a doubt, this is not going to hurt you one bit, that you're going to come out at the end of this very, even stronger than you were before, but you're going to have more of an understanding about things that you didn't really think about before. And, you know, we're not going to even mention the podcast he was on because we're not going to give them any limelight whatsoever. It's just disgusting when people assume things and think things because this guy was a guest on a podcast that he's part of this conversation of negative words that people are saying, and that's the problem. One thing that we at PopX really take a lot of pride in, and I don't want to use that word too boastful, but we are a rated E for everyone podcast. And the reason why is because we want an 8-year-old as well as an 80-year-old to sit down and enjoy the world of comics and film like we do without all of that crazy language, gossip, rhetoric, and, you know, just very slanderous talk. We're not about that.
Yeah.
And I want to let you know, from all of us here at PopX, Michael and Retro Blasting, if you need us, let us know. We're in your corner, okay? So from all of us here, that's Mike, is there anything you want to say in closing?
I just to, you know, let them know that, you know, we appreciate everything that they do, and they put their, you know, hard amount of time that they put into these videos and stuff, and go to these panels. You know, I'm planning on going again to see, you know, Joe, I'd love to, you know, for you one time, if you make it up my way, I'd love to take you over there.
Yes, I'm down.
Sit through one of your panels, and it is definitely worth sitting through, and the amount of effort and time and preparation that they put into it, you know, it's their dedication and their hard work, and it's just sad that, you know, to be drugged through like they were.
Yeah.
You know, by this other podcast, and it really is a shame.
It is a shame, and, you know, that's it's not cool. And so when one of our friends comes under fire, we pull out all the guns blazing. So, all right. So for more information about what Michael French and all the amazing people at Retro Blasting are doing, go visit retroblasting.com. Make sure to subscribe to his channel and leave him some cool positive comments, and maybe even say, hey, I learned about you guys over on PopX Cast, and just share some love. You know, it's not about tearing our friends down. It's about building them up. Okay. So we're going to wrap things up here. Mike, we're going to kind of just close out the podcast here if we can. Austin, you want to go ahead and take that reign, my friend?
Well, let's start wrapping her up. You guys can follow me on all the social medias. I'm getting into written reviews now.
Social media?
Social media, guys? I've been doing written reviews. So there's a thing called Letterboxd. It's really cool. You can list out your favorite movies of the year. You can create, like, okay, what was my favorite movie of the Pixar category? And there's so many things you can do on it. You can write full reviews. So if you guys want to go check out Letterboxd, that, you don't have to follow me, but get on there, check it out, because it's a cool way to keep up with what you're watching on the daily, and I really like that. You can also follow me on MySpace. I'll make you guys one of my top four friends. We are part of an amazing network called the Gonna Geek Network. For all things even more geeky, head over to gonnageek.com and check out some amazing podcasts on our home network. You guys can also check us out on the social medias. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter, and Pinterest, all at PopXCast. Send us comments and suggestions via email at popxcast@gmail.com. Also, for future and past shows, visit our official website at www.popxcast.com. And I want to thank Joseph for being an awesome host tonight and coming up with these ideas, man. You killed it. What a show this was. We've jam-packed so many things, but I've enjoyed it.
It's almost like every 10 minutes we were talking about something different. Did you know? It's kind of crazy, right?
There were so many things, man.
But, you know, when you sit down and you have to actually script, I wish you guys could see the script that we have to. I mean, it's not that we're reading everything verbatim, but we kind of have to keep everything within 5 or 10 minutes of what we're talking about. And somehow, some way, we always finish our topic right at 9:55. I don't know why. I don't know how that works out. It's just, I guess it's good editorial work. I don't know. But we want to thank all of our friends hanging out with us over in the chat rooms. We have Lindsay, Luke, Sean, and just a cast of members. Orlando, Joe Guarneri up in New York. Man, you guys are just awesome, killing it tonight. Awesome. Thank you so much for hanging with us. And so I am Joseph Burke, a.k.a. at Joseph Burke Arts, all over the internet. And, of course, hats off to my amazing team, PopX. I could not seriously do this show without you. And that's it for this episode of PopX Cast. And for Mike, who's on vacation on Father's Day.
Mike.
Podcasting. I mean,
can't do any better.
There,
I mean,
you,
that's just
that's
there you
class.
Go.
That is class. You get a cookie for that. So join us next time as we will come back in July for Ant-Man and the Wasp film review and more. Going to be awesome. So be sure to join us. And Austin, you got anything else you want to say?
No, man. This has been a great show. I can't wait to come back. PopX Cast is booming right now.
Yes,
and
it
thank
is.
You everybody for tuning in and commenting. It's been really awesome.
All right. So you guys take care. We will see you next time right here on PopX Cast. From everyone at PopX Cast, thanks for listening. Please make sure to like our Facebook page, facebook.com/PopXCast, and click the follow button to get our live stream notifications. Drop us an email, popxcast@gmail.com. Be sure to check out this and more great content on the Gonna Geek Network at GonnaGeek.com. Get your geek on!